This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by Gusto, online payroll and benefits service built for modern small businesses. And keep listening, I'm going to tell you how to get 3 months free. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz. My guest today is Reeves Weideman. He is a contributing editor at New York Magazine, also featured in New Yorker, New York Times Magazine, Rolling Stone, Harper's, and we're going to talk about a book that is fairly new called Billion Dollar Loser, The Epic Rise and Spectacular Fall of Adam Neumann and WeWork. So Reeves, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
So why did you give away the ending? for people that maybe haven't followed this story, kind of give us the, sure, like, here's what was going on at the high level. Here's what happened.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, a lot of people may know it, but the short version of the rise of WeWork is it was an office leasing company, started in New York City that in the course of a decade, expanded all over the world. The basic business premise was slicing up large office spaces into small glass cubes that they would rent out. Mm-hmm. By 2019, they had more than 400 locations around the world. They also had apartments. They had started an elementary school and a variety of businesses that required a lot of money. And so eventually in 2019, they decided to go public at a sort of gobsmacking $47 billion valuation, and in pretty spectacular fashion over a few weeks in the summer and fall of last year, the IPO itself collapsed. Adam Neumann, the company's founder, was ousted, and he's now spending most of his time surfing. So, and the future for him and for the company still remains to be seen, but it was a pretty remarkable rise and a pretty shocking and swift fall.
From the high of the valuation to like when it all shook out, what did it shed, about 80%, 90%?
You're going to make me do some math, but you're about right. It got up to 47 billion, at least in this theoretical way. This past spring, SoftBank, which is WeWork's primary investor, marked it down to just under 3 billion, 2.9 billion. So a pretty shocking loss of value in a very short amount of time.
So what was it? You did a series of interviews with Adam and obviously a lot of other people that show up in the book, but what was kind of the timeline for your interviews? Cause it was really pre-crash, right?
Yeah. I mean, I work at New York Magazine, and we had first decided to do this story at the beginning of 2019. And the reason we did it was because WeWork was growing so fast and because it suddenly was everywhere. We have an office in Soho and in New York, and suddenly there were half a dozen of them just in a few blocks of where our office was. And so we saw it as kind of a success story. We knew there was some strange things about the company, and it became very clear to me after interviewing Adam Neumann last April 2019, shortly before the IPO was announced. And then talking to people who'd worked with him, some members of his executive team, that everything that was good and bad about WeWork revolved around Adam Neumann. Mm-hmm. He was the visionary. He was the sort of branding expert, and he was the ambition that was driving the company. And then, as it became clear, he was also kind of embodied a lot of what went wrong.
So my only instance as I did work out of a WeWork in Dumbo one time.
Oh yeah,
a few years ago.
Was it nice?
Yeah, it was nice. It was it was like all the kind of hip places in that part of town.
Right, water, nice coffee.
Very minimal decor.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, you brought up that idea of all good things and bad things, because in reading through the book, you almost get the impression, and maybe other people have covered it this way too, that it wouldn't have happened with him, and it wouldn't have crashed without him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's when we wrote my first story, and this was when the company was still on the rise. I didn't come up with this, but the title, one of my bosses did, was The Eye in We. And you know, it's just everything about this company was just sort of wrapped up in Adam's great qualities, which helped the company grow, and then things that kind of sent it off the rails.
And in some ways, I mean, his ability to convince people of the dream is what really had people open up their checkbooks in seemingly not very practical or sensible ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it was surprising to me at various points, and maybe it shouldn't have been, you know, how much people were convinced by him rather than the numbers they were seeing. Yeah. And that went for all kinds of people. It was the investors. It was also employees. You know, this company went from a few hundred people to 15,000 people in a handful of years. And a lot of employees I talked to, some of whom became very jaded by the end of it, were there because they felt a part of this mission that WeWork talked about of making a life, not a living, giving people a better day at work. It was frankly inspiring to people to be working in that environment.
The whole co-working, if we can lump them into that, yep. You know, co-working phenomenon, you know, is a pretty stable, accepted, you know, mainstream kind of thing now in most, certainly in most major cities. You know, what was WeWork doing that just kind of made them so different?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they were not the first. Right. There were a number of them already in New York alone. And I think a couple of things, to talk about Adam again. I talked to a number of other co-working operators, some of whom still exist, some of whom run very successful businesses in different cities around the country. Some have one co-working space, some have half a dozen, some have more. And they're all kind of content with that. Yeah. And they're happy, you know, they might want to expand a little bit, but none of them even seem to want to create some giant empire. Adam Neumann, from the very beginning, told people that's what he wanted. He wanted to become too big to fail, as he put it to a lot of people. He wanted to expand globally. And so, you know, I think that's a big part of it, is that it was just his drive and his vision. And then his ability to convince people that vision was possible to achieve, even when kind of the realities of the co-working business, it's not an easy business to grow. It's not easy to build out spaces as quickly as WeWork did. So I think his ambition and his ability to convince people, and then the money that he got as a result, were kind of the main things that propelled the company.
So during the interviews, because you said you kind of initiated it, maybe it was more of like a, wow, this is a giant success story right here in our backyard. During the course of the interviews, did you find yourself thinking, this guy's a nut, or, you know, this is like, you know, this is all like smoke and mirrors?
Yeah. I had a half an hour interview with him in April in his office. And, you know, in my job, you get used to interviewing powerful people, and you get used to the sort of tricks that they use. And you know, on the one hand, I think I felt the charisma and charm that other people did. I think, you know, I'll give myself a mild amount of credit or it's both a benefit and a burden to be as skeptical as I am of people. But I think you could kind of tell that he was a charmer. And I think what's interesting about what other people would say is that they kind of knew that. It's not like he totally pulled the wool over people's eyes, but part of what people would tell me is, you know, well, he did a pretty good job of convincing me, so I figure he's going to do a pretty good job of being able to convince other people. And so there is this kind of, not everyone was just an idiot who was sort of wooed by him, but I think, you know, a lot of them were just able to recognize that his charm would be a real, you know, tool.
I feel like, you know, I read a lot of business books. I must admit, you know, a lot of them are how-to books and less of sort of a storybook, if you will. But I feel like you still did a good job of covering him with some compassion. I mean, I think that there are plenty of people that were willing to throw him under the bus and, you know, write some pretty negative things. And I feel like you sort of brought out that, hey, there's kind of two sides to this.
Yeah.
Was that intentional, or was that just going to be your style?
I think I did not. Well, I think I set out in everything I write to be compassionate, at least as a sort of base layer to start from. Some people deserve more compassion than others. And I think, you know, Adam was and is a complicated figure. One thing about him that is true is his rhetoric around wanting to change the world and make it a better place, which he began to talk about constantly by the end of his time at WeWork. The mission statement of the company was to elevate the world's consciousness. And one thing I talked to people about was like, did he believe that? Or was this just kind of a sales pitch? Mm. And I came to believe, as most people told me, that he did believe it. He both wanted to change the world and he believed that WeWork was capable of doing it. Now, that may have been a bit naive and foolish to think about. And there are certainly bodies that were buried along the way as he built this empire. But, you know, he wasn't just sort of a crazy, narcissistic, ambitious, greedy person, which I think is what was out there. Sometimes those characteristics came through and got the best of him. But I think in other cases, he was also, you know, an ambitious, eager entrepreneur who did want to do good and did in some cases, but in others, you know, clearly things went awry.
So one of the things that I was struck with is the level of detail that you had. And of course, this is, you know, a lot of people who write business books aren't journalists.
Yeah.
I'll throw myself into that category. Yeah. And the level of detail in some of the characters, down to the dialogue of like his girlfriend at the time's first date. I mean, mm-hmm. where did you get that? How much time did it take you to get to that level of detail?
A lot of work. you know, I think by the end of this, I interviewed, you know, more than 200 people, mm-hmm. whether that was employees, friends, enemies, rivals, executives, investors, all of it. And, you know, what was interesting and useful about this is when you're often when you're reporting about companies on the way up, nobody wants to tell you any of the interesting and good stuff, especially when things are going well. And this was an interesting case where overnight, you know, when I was reporting on the company in the spring into summer of 2019, people were telling me some of this stuff, but they were very nervous about doing so. And then once everything fell apart, once Adam no longer seemed to be this all-powerful figure, people are more willing to share, which is, you know, for my purposes, I wish more people would on the way up. And frankly, if they did, we might avoid some situations like this. But
yeah, they're probably telling themselves a different story on the way up part of the problem.
Yeah. And for one reason or another, you know, you look past the weird things that are happening, and it might be because you're self-interested. You know, a lot of these people had stock and mm-hmm. wanted it to do well or you're, you know, self-rationalizing in one way or another.
Yeah, I imagine the people that sat around thinking $46 billion valuation and we're going public, you know.
Yeah. And all of them, you know, all of them knew it was ridiculous. And yet, you know, and this is one of the problems, you know, there's this sort of fateful moment in the WeWork story where SoftBank, this Japanese technology conglomerate, invested $4 billion into WeWork, which was at the time one of the largest venture capital investments ever. And in hindsight, that moment sent the company off a cliff. It was almost impossible to spend that money to do what they wanted to do. But was Adam supposed to say no? Were they supposed to say no to this, you know, unheard of amount of money? It's really easy to do so in hindsight. It's much more difficult on the way up.
And now let's hear from this week's sponsor. Look, paydays are great, but running payroll, calculating taxes, deductions, compliance, that's not easy. Unless, of course, you have Gusto. Gusto is simple online payroll and benefits built just for small businesses. Gusto automatically files your payroll taxes and directly deposits your team's pay. Plus, you can offer all kinds of other benefits, 401ks, health insurance, workers' comp, and more. And because you're a listener to this show, you're going to get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. So go to gusto/tape That's Gusto/TAPE, and tell them John sent you. There's a concept that you talk about in the book, and I wonder if the world we are experiencing, you and I are recording this in October of 2020, mm-hmm. When the world is a very interesting place. The concept of this physical social network, which I think is really an interesting concept, and I don't know if that's like associated with co-working in general or always mm-hmm. has been, but you know, was that an ambition that really is not achievable?
It's a good question. It was certainly Adam's ambition, and I think he by and large failed at getting there. And you know, the idea was we'll have, you know, WeWork now has 800 locations around the world. And the idea was that you would connect those in some way. And WeWork had tried to create various versions of its own sort of LinkedIn, you know, kind of network, Facebook, whatever model you want to take.
WeBook,
yeah, exactly. And WeConnect was okay. the one they had used early on. And everything had a we in it.
Yeah.
And it just didn't feel necessary. And it's interesting, you know, one thing I've thought a lot about recently is, you know, Adam started WeWork out of the last recession, the financial crisis. Rent was cheap in New York. That was a big factor in the ability of the company to expand. And I think clearly we're still waiting to see how the situation we're in now shakes out. But new models are going to emerge in real estate and every other industry. Yeah. And WeWork is trying to position itself as being that. They're obviously hobbled. The brand is pretty devastated at this point. But mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. And it could be. And the reality is, yes, the idea of a physical social network, I think, is even more appealing now. It's a tricky thing to build, and I think WeWork didn't solve it. And it's gonna. I'm not actually sure how you would create this kind of vague idea and make it something real.
Yeah, you know, right now we're standing here in October, feeling like, you know, there's physical nothing.
Yeah,
you know, it's right. Like nobody wants to go in a room with other people. Are you kidding me?
I know. Any kind of connection would be nice.
Yeah. So this is always a tough question, but in going in, everybody has a bias. You kind of go in thinking, here's what I'm going to find. Did you anything just really surprise you when you dug in? Like, whoa, didn't see that coming.
I would say, I almost feel like saying this makes me sound a little bit naive, but I'm not a business reporter by training. I've sort of come to it later in the last half decade. I've written a lot about these kind of high growth startups, Uber, Vice Media, WeWork. And it was surprising to me as someone who didn't come from a business background, how many decisions, huge decisions are not based as much on the numbers as I would expect. How much is based on gut feeling, instinct, relationships. And you know, I think at least in a small business context, you kind of understand that with these big giant companies, you sort of figure there's someone kind of running the numbers and the models.
Yeah.
And there certainly were, but at very crucial points from that SoftBank investment that we talked about to others, it came down to people, you know, people having a gut feeling about something and going for it, even if every bit of data was telling them this might not be a good idea. So, you know, I think that was surprising to me, and it's not just something I've seen at WeWork. It's something that I feel like has come up at other companies and repeats itself. So
that leads really right into what's my last question. In the back flap of the cover, I don't always read that far. I don't know what struck me about this.
Glad you made it. That's what my picture is, I think.
Yeah. This the first to capture the highly leveraged all blue sky of American business in the first term of President Trump. I don't know if those were your words or if publisher put those in there or not, but it seems to be suggesting that WeWork in some ways was almost a cultural microcosm of like American business, and that their failure sort of signals a shift. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I'm curious if that's where that line came from.
Yeah, well, my editor put those words on the page, and I approved them. So, yeah. I do believe in them, and I thought about this in the context. You know, I don't know if it stands in for all of American business forever, but I do think WeWork stands in a lot for the decade that we just came out of. And you think about sort of the spirit behind the company was this sort of, you know, very communitarian. We is in the name. It was something that millennials especially were like desperately seeking coming out of the last recession in all kinds of ways. And at some point along the line, things shifted. And I think part of it was that the company just became too big. I have a working theory, again, based more on gut than numbers at this point, but that it's just not a good idea for companies to get as big as many of them were in this past decade and expand into so many different things. I think it becomes a problematic. But in the course of this decade, I think, you know, plenty of people made comparisons between Adam Neumann and Donald Trump. Adam was good friends with Jared Kushner as one example. And whatever you sort of think about things politically, it was clear that some of the things that some of the reasons Donald Trump appeals to certain voters is in the same, Adam Neumann appeals in the same way, very charismatic, appealing to whatever sort of this group wants to hear. You know, I'm not going to get into political analysis here, but I do think that sort of charm as and vision and ambition as the driving force behind your company ultimately isn't going to get you to the finish line. And I think it happened with WeWork, and I think, you know, we're gonna see other companies that have grown hard and fast over the last decade on the same impulses, I think, have faced some of the same struggles, especially given the environment we're in now.
Visiting with Reeves Wideman, author of Billion Dollar Loser. So Reeves, you want to tell people where they can find Billion Dollar Loser? And I know
everywhere.
I was going to say, I know at your bookstores and whatnot, but have you got a site or anything for the book that might offer some other content as you continue to work on this?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check out billiondollarloserbook.com, and you can both read the original articles that I wrote for New York Magazine and see some of the reviews that have already come in. And yeah, the book will be available very soon, October 20th, and anywhere you like buying your books, either at the Amazon, which is the WeWork sort of business, or your local co-working company/bookstore.
So. And did you record an audiobook version?
There will be an audiobook version. I did not read it, which is this 20 minutes is all anyone's going to get, but there will be an audiobook version out as good. Well.
Well, I think you were smart on that. It's really hard to read a book, actually.
You've done it.
I've done it. I've done it. Yeah. Numerous times. And it's very taxing.
Yeah. I don't envy that task. I hate even looking back at what I've written. So having to go back and read it would be doubly mortifying. So.
So Samuel L. Jackson, I heard, is actually reading yours.
Exactly. It's Samuel L. Jackson doing the first part. David Attenborough. just all the
nice. Awesome. Well, Reeves, it was great for you to stop by, and hopefully we'll see you soon one of these days out there on the road.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.